11. The Crystal Towers.
You can find noctili, their proper plural noun, in the colder waters of the world. Some sailors have even claimed sightings along the edge of the world's frown, but those waters are too warm to house nests. Besides, the ever-persistent storms would only drive away the noctili.
From Kolvinar Vryum's Bestiary for Conjurers, page 46. Steam rose around Amundal as his magma conjuration pounded at the ice encasing the building he was to search. The creature, a mixture of black-red rock and coursing lava, tossed aside chunks of ice as they came loose, leaving a trail of steaming shards. A head and a half taller than Amundal, its molten muscles burst with flame as it moved. The conjured hawk had returned not long after Amundal summoned the elemental, and he had since sent it back through the portal to the Vizirm expanse. Over the course of several minutes, Amundal's conjuration managed to carve out a decent-sized tunnel along the crystal wall. It had repeatedly tried to cut into the crystal surface, but the building was just as resilient as the dock. Not so much as a scratch marred the pale blue surface. A trench started to form beneath the magma conjuration, and the fiery creature sank to where its head was almost even with Amundal's. The conjuration had burrowed about 50 finials through the ice when someone cleared their throat behind Amundal. Eyebrows raised, Amundal turned to find Faelinia standing behind him, her hands on her hips.
"It looks like you lost," she said smugly.
"That's because there isn't a door on this side," Amundal said frankly, gesturing back to his conjuration. Faelinia frowned in disapproval.
"Come on, the others are waiting."
Amundal returned the magma creature to the Aldenal plane, then followed Faelinia around the building and into the tunnel she had carved with her magic. Neither the tunnel's ceiling nor the walls were wet or dripping. She must have used a disintegrating blast. They soon arrived at a wide opening, 100 finials from the building's edge. Had she burrowed through? No. The opening was the building's entrance, but it lacked any doors. Why hadn't the ice shelf spread through an open door? Perhaps a Barjan barrier was once present, he mused, following Faelinia through a wide hallway. There was an odd lack of odor in the building, as if the air had been untouched for centuries. Intriguing. Not far from the doors, the hallway emptied into an enormous circular room composed entirely of crystal. It looked like a tall foyer of sorts. Several members of squads 1 and 2 stood in the foyer, their heads tilted back and their jaws slack. Each was dressed in winter gear. The soldiers looked like burly bears, as they had their armor on beneath their thick coats. Ilden, however, wasn't among them.
"He can't still be sleeping, can he? And what are they looking at?"
As Amundal entered the foyer, he followed the gawking gazes of his fellow explorers. He started with surprise as his eyes fell upon the room's vaulted ceiling that rose to a dizzying height. He had never seen a ceiling that high in his life. Amundal was, of course, accustomed to vaulted rooms, but this crystal foyer exceeded anything in his experience. The ceiling was dozens of stories above the floor, and its crystalline nature allowed a view to a brilliant blue sky. If he had to guess, the foyer was 40 or 50 stories tall.
"Incredible," Amundal thought, glancing about the rest of the towering foyer.
The base of a grand staircase stood opposite the hall he and Faelinia had traversed, its steps wrapped around the room in a counterclockwise ascent, spiraling all the way to the top. Long landings marked each floor with balconies that lined the entire circumference of the round room. Hallways branched off from those balconies like the spokes of a wheel. Faelinia called to the others, her voice echoing off the crystal walls.
"We'll break up into pairs and search separate floors. As you can see," she gestured to the crystal ceiling hundreds of finials away, "this building does reach beyond the ice shelf. Since there will be 6 pairs, each pair will search every 6th floor. Mentil and Ritigan will start with the 10th floor. Amandel and I will take the 15th. The rest of you split up however you wish. Once you're finished searching, come back to this foyer and we'll discuss our findings."
While the group split off into pairs, Faelinia turned to Amandel and beckoned to him with a gloved finger.
"So, just the 2 of us?" He smiled and swaggered across the foyer. The others were nearing the stairs when he reached Faelinia.
"It seems you do want to spend some time with me." "Don't flatter yourself, Amandel."
She turned, hurrying after the others.
"Someone needs to watch out for you and your antics."
"Oh, really?"
"Yes,"
Faelinia said, her tone insistent.
"I don't trust that you won't try to conjure some colossal brute to rip through this building once we find this glacier's top. Someone needs to stop you from bringing this building down on us."
"Ouch." Faelinia turned away, swiftly heading for the crystal stairs.
"Well, this is getting more and more difficult," he muttered. "How am I going to win you over?"
Whatever the feat, it had to be impressive. Inspiration came to Vaim at the oddest times. This particular spark was spurred by watching the various members of the expedition tear down the camp. Several tents were quite wobbly, making it easy for them to be collapsed. Others, however, had been staked into ice that had melted and refrozen. Both situations were not optimal, and that is what evoked Vaim's creativity.
"There is a better way," she mused, picking her way through the camp. Vaim found it best to record these insights when fresh in her mind, and so she hurried to her own tent. Hopefully, Kaidol hadn't begun the process of taking it down. Vaim sighed with relief as she saw her tent still standing, but she wondered what had delayed Kaidol. Their tent was larger than the others. It was of Mindalarnian design and was tall enough that she could stand or walk without hunching. A simple desk stood opposite the tent door with a lone chair in front of it. Both pieces of furniture had been pulled from the Jibaran, and Vaim intended to have them carried all the way to Tardalum. "Focus," she chided herself, crossing the tent to a trunk beside her cot.
She removed her sketch pad and a rectangular box, a Tevis roll designed to keep its contents warm. This particular Tevis roll, a recent invention, kept Vaim's ink and quill from freezing. Unfortunately, Vaim had not been part of its design or construction. She set the items on the desk, then opened the box. Visible warmth left the lid, and Vaim removed her quill and ink vial.
"Still wet," she mused, testing the vial. "Good."
Pleased with the condition of her writing utensil, Vaim sat and flipped through her sketchbook. She briefly paused at the sketch of the communications rod and studied it. She had finished the drawing before setting sail. The morning the Jibaran left Soroth, Vaim had a scribe from the Mindalarnian embassy make a copy to send to the Hillenard. The man barely finished it before the ship weighed anchor. If he hadn't done so, Vaim was fully prepared to keep him aboard and send him back in a longboat. The thought of that possibility evoked a mirthful chuckle.
"What a sight that would have been," she mused, finding a blank page.
Vaim took a deep breath and swiftly began recording her inspiration.
"While sojourning in Abadal, I had an epiphany, spurred by inadequate shelter. Tents are flimsy things, especially when pitted against nature, but we have the means through harnessing the channels to produce something beyond the product of primitive man."
Vaim paused, eyeing her words with a sense of satisfaction.
"I propose the development of a Tevis roll that can be portable, yet sturdy enough to maintain a structure. Poles are commonly used to provide a tense structure, and those poles require the use of stakes. But imagine a tent without stakes. No, it will not collapse."
She then drew a diagram of a simple A-frame tent, but with tent poles that were curved so that the flat ends were parallel to the ground. Vayam then sketched a magnified view of the pole, utilizing a cutaway method for diagramming Tevis Rawls. A thick disc sat at the bottom of the pole, where the pole and ground met. Within that disc, she sketched various lines denoting the flows of magic needed to operate the proposed Tevis Rawl.
Telekinetic magic can be used in two ways, and two ways only. To push or pull. This anchoring Tevis Rawl will utilize the pulling aspect of telekinetic magic.
Vayam drew lines to the points at both the bottom and top of the disc.
Both ends will emit controlled telekinetic particles that will bind the pole in an upright position, or at least a position perpendicular to the surface it will rest on. Since not all surfaces are perfectly level,
she paused, furrowing her brow.
Perhaps I can fix that. Note, design a compensator for perfect uprightness,
Vayam wrote to the side, and then resumed writing her notes. She vigorously recorded her inspiration, detailing the various mechanisms that would need to be used to create such a Tevis Rawl.
Now for an activation method.
The Tevis Rawl would have to be in place when activated. There were many ways to activate a Tevis Rawl: touch, sound, presence, movement.
Touch isn't an option. The tent would fall over at the first accidental bump.
Vayam paused, leaning back in her chair.
Movement, perhaps? A combination?
As she considered the dilemma, the tent flap opened behind her. Whoever was at the door didn't announce their presence. She glanced over her shoulder. Keidel stood within the tent door, holding its flap in one hand.
Yes?
Vayam asked.
Am I intruding?
Vayam pursed her lips. Well, she was experiencing a momentary block.
Thank Lord Chesareth, she thought.
If Keidel had been a moment sooner, she would have interrupted the flow of creativity. Vayam hated interruptions. Vayam shook her head.
What is it?
The Jibaran is almost completely underwater, the lieutenant said, and Captain Adara seems calmer.
Good.
Vayam nodded and rose from her chair.
Any news from the scouts?
Nothing yet.
Vayam nodded, noticing she still had her quill in hand. She spun, placing it back in the heating box. No point in letting it freeze.
Are you ready to tear down the tent? Keidel asked.
In a bit, Vayam said. I am designing a new Tevis Rawl. If you would stay outside and keep watch, it would be much appreciated. I'll emerge when I am finished.
Keidel bowed, then swiftly left the tent and secured the flap.
I like her,
Vayam thought, smiling. She turned back to the desk, took her seat once again, and retrieved her quill.
Hopefully those scouts will be a while yet, she mused,
returning her quill to the parchment. Amandal and Felinia's search of the 15th floor was quite tame, both in conversation and discovery. Amandal thought it best that he restrain his advances and focus on the task at hand. He and Felinia used their magic to scour the crystal tower. They stayed together, searching the halls near the landing, but Amandal's conjurations and Felinia's illusions spread throughout the rest of the 15th floor. Like every other part of the building, the 15th floor was made completely of crystal. Every room and every door was a translucent pale blue. To Amandal's surprise, even the windows were crystal. But the windows looked out on nothing but thick sheets of ice. There seemed to be varying types of crystal that comprised the towering structure. Certain walls lacked any transparency, while others were somewhat translucent. Their varying natures sparked dozens of questions in Amandal's mind. Were these walls always crystal? Or had the mythical chrysalac, as mentioned by Vayam, turned the buildings into crystal? Were the non-transparent walls a part of the structural support? Were they dense stone that had been changed, or were they just thick crystal? The crystal tower presented quite the conundrum that Amundel felt driven to solve. He didn't have the time, though, or the means. They turned a corner, finding one of Felinia's illusions down the hall. She had sent several of them flying through the 15th floor, finding the edges of the building. Felinia had tried sending the illusions through the walls, as illusory magic could do that sort of thing, but something barred her illusions. So she and Amundel searched half of the 15th floor with the illusions while the conjurations checked the other half.
"Well, this is the last section, I guess," Felinia said, turning to Amundel. "How is your search coming along?"
"It's not," Amundel replied, focusing his vision through his earthen conjurations. Few of his creatures in the Vizierm expanse could resist the cold, so Amundel had resorted to conjurations from the Aldenal plane. He had summoned 13 of the earthen beings. Felinia sighed, stopping in the middle of the hall.
"I can't believe this glacier is so tall."
"Well, we are in the coldest place on Kaldah," Amundel said.
"Oh, stop," Felinia groaned, and proceeded down the hall.
They continued their search, but found only ice beyond the windows. With their search finished, Amundel commanded his conjurations to return to the towering foyer. He pushed aside his shared vision with them, focusing on Felinia.
"You know, you don't have to stare," Felinia said. "I know you're attracted to me."
"That's not why I'm staring," Amundel replied, his voice a monotone, since a great deal of concentration was needed to tune out the vision he shared with his conjurations. "I need to focus on something in order to not get dizzy." Felinia blushed, glancing away. They didn't speak the rest of the way back to the foyer. Several of the pairs were already waiting, gathered on the 15th floor.
"I didn't expect any of them to be finished," Felinia whispered.
They continued toward the others who were lounging on the floor.
"The lot of you finished quickly," Felinia said,
folding her arms and raising her eyebrows in inquiry. Amundel found the pose alluring.
"Ice sheets all over," a soldier said. "There's nothing down there."
"Oh, really?"
Felinia nodded, examining the other pairs. She focused in on two of the soldiers.
"So the two of you searched every room on your floor?"
The soldiers glanced to one another, then turned back to Felinia with defiant expressions.
"Look,"
another soldier said, rising from the crystal floor. He was as tall as Amundel, but with a thicker build. He didn't look like a Sarothian, as his skin was pale and spotted with freckles.
"If you've seen one sheet of ice, you've seen them all. There's no point in searching every room."
Felinia narrowed her eyes, moving in front of the standing soldier.
"There could be tunnels leading to the surface, Hevesir."
"From what? The windows?" a lounging soldier asked, laughing.
"There are balconies off of some of the rooms," Felinia said. "We encountered several," she gestured between herself and Amundel, "and you would have known that if you searched the entire floor."
At that moment, Amundel's conjurations lumbered into the towering foyer.
"To me," he commanded each of them.
"Did you see anything but ice?"
the standing soldier, Hevesir, asked Felinia.
"No,"
she replied.
"See,"
Hevesir said with a grin,
"you proved my point."
Felinia looked ready to strike the man. Granted, she probably wouldn't use her fists.
"All right, then," she said, taking a deep breath. "Here's the new plan. The lot of you," she gestured to each of the pairs, "will search the 17th floor while Amundel and I search the 18th.
Murmured complaints left the soldier's lips.
"You're a spoil sport, Felinia," Hevesir said.
"And you're a disgusting pig," she retorted.
Hevesir's lips twisted into a grimace. He and Felinia looked as if they were about to come to blows.
"Run,"
Amundel commanded his conjurations. Resounding footsteps echoed throughout the foyer as Amundel stepped between Felinia and Hevesir. He was not about to let anyone bully her. Sure, she could take care of herself, but Amandal wanted to show Felinia that he could be there for her. The charging conjurations drew startled glances, and the soldiers all rose to their feet. Hevesir flinched, glancing briefly to the conjurations, but settled his gaze on Amandal. "Why don't you all move on up the stairs?" Amandal said, waving a hand that said, "After you." Hevesir glowered at Amandal, but backed away. The conjurations had arrived. "Come on," one of the soldiers said, putting a hand on Hevesir's arm. Amandal and Felinia remained near the balcony as the soldiers climbed the stairs. Several of them were complaining, but their murmuring faded as they disappeared down one of the halls of the 17th floor. "Well," Amandal said, putting his hands on his hips, "that's one guy I'd say isn't attracted to you." Felinia pursed her lips and turned to the railing. "I'll send my conjurations ahead. I assume you want to wait for the other pairs?" Mentil and Reedigan hadn't returned, nor had the pair who was searching the 16th floor. "No," Felinia said, pushing off the railing. "I'll leave an illusion." Amandal and Felinia climbed the stairs to the 18th floor with the illusions and conjurations trailing behind them, Felinia quiet. "I'll take that half," Amandal said, pointing to his left. Felinia nodded, then sent her illusions flying. They twirled through the air, zipping into the various halls. "Now who's showing off?" Amandal said, grinning at Felinia, but she ignored the flirtatious banter. Her lips were drawn to a line and her eyes were narrowed. She strode to one of the halls near the landing but didn't gesture or call to Amandal as she had when beginning their search on the 15th floor. Who was that guy? Amandal wondered. He kept his pace even with Felinia's stride. That was no mere bickering. Former lovers, perhaps? Hevesir couldn't be the coward Ildin had mentioned, could he? "So, what's the story between you two?" Amandal asked.
"Who?"
"Hevesir and you. What's the story?" Felinia looked as if she were holding back a frown. "All right then," Amandal sighed. "If you don't want to talk about it, let's choose a different subject. Crystal." Felinia scrunched her face in an exaggerated fashion. "Crystal?" she asked, averting her eyes from Amandal. "Yes," Amandal said, cocking his chin toward the wall. "We're surrounded by it, so why not talk about it?" Felinia laughed awkwardly. "You're crazy." "And you're not talkative," he shot back.
"I can be."
"Okay, then let's talk about Crystal." A weak smile spread across Felinia's face.
"What about it?"
"Anything," Amandal said. "What comes to your mind when I say the word crystal?" He gestured to the hall.
"Well, I would definitely not want to live in a house made of it."
Amandal nodded. "Privacy is preferable. I can agree with that. What else?" They soon found the edge of the 18th floor. Their discussion on crystal had turned into speculation. Felinia's mood had also lightened. The conversation was evidently a sufficient distraction.
"What kind of Tevis roll could turn this entire building into crystal?" Felinia asked.
"Tevis roll?" Amandal scoffed as they approached a pair of closed doors. "These buildings were turned to crystal by a chrysalac." Felinia's laughter echoed down the hall as she opened the doors.
"A chrysalac?" she managed to ask between bursts of merriment. You can't be serious."
Amandal frowned at her skepticism. He shook his head while entering a rectangular anteroom with two corridors branching off along the far wall.
"How on Kalda did you even come up with that notion?" Felinia asked, following him into the room. "A chrysalac? What are you, a child?"
"Do I dare tell her?" he wondered. Felinia had not been at the council held on the Jybaran. "Perhaps I shouldn't," he mused. If he mentioned Vaim, Felinia might get the wrong impression. Once at the left corridor, Amandal knocked on the wall. Indestructible crystal. Isn't that what the chrysalac makes? That dock didn't so much as crack under the weight of my conjuration. Felinia conceded with an amused grunt.
You're a difficult one, aren't you? Amandal thought, grinning at her.
They proceeded through the hall until it emptied into a large room filled with crystal furniture. Floor-to-ceiling windows lined the far wall, not blocked by ice. What lay beyond them was a sight grander than anything Amandal had ever seen. Several enormous crystalline structures rose from the ice shelf. There were at least a dozen crystal towers to the right and left, arrayed in a curving pattern. Felinia gasped.
I can't believe it.
Amandal sauntered to the window, getting a better look at what lay outside. The ice shelf was about one floor below them. Shadows spread over the snowy ground cast by the buildings. Even at this height, the crystal buildings towered still higher.
Maybe 50 stories wasn't an accurate assumption.
The colossal structures were a magnificent sight, and there were more of them than he had initially seen. It looked as if there were rows of crystal towers arrayed in a curve.
There must be hundreds of them, Felinia marveled, coming to Amandal's side.
An entire city, Amandal said. Imagine how many Ishari lived here. If this place is even a quarter the size of Sarath's footprint.
He left the assumption hanging. Sarath, the city, had a population of nearly 200,000, but its buildings didn't soar into the sky.
Millions, Felinia whispered. Millions of Ishari. But where did they all go? Where had they gone? Did the Ishari abandon this city? They must have.
Or a plague wiped them out, Amandal thought.
But there were no remains. Wouldn't this frigid climate preserve something? They couldn't have perished from war, he mused, studying the crystal towers. The structures would show signs of battle, wouldn't they? But then he recalled the resilience of the dock, so maybe not.
Look, Felinia blurted, pointing at the crystal tower across from them. A balcony!
Amandal followed the direction of her finger. Isn't that the building to the south, where we held the meeting last night? Felinia nodded, then squeezed Amandal's arm.
Come on, let's go tell someone.
Amandal glanced down at Felinia's hand. She flinched and pulled back, looking surprised at what she had done.
That's progress, he thought, intently studying Felinia.
She bit her lip, then hurried out of the room.
She's warming up to me, he thought, taking one last look out the window.